Welcome to the College Crosscast. My name is Jake Mazar, and if you are looking at the timestamp on this podcast as you are listening to it and wondering why it's relatively short, that is because I am the only one here tonight. Safe is on the R&R after a trip to the dentist, so he was unavailable. Ryan's pretty busy. Everyone else is kind of a pretty busy working on some stuff, but I figured I would not leave you guys alone without any analysis from your favorite podcast for this weekend's batch of games, so you get to listen to my dulcet tones for the next 15, 20 minutes or so as I help get you prepared for this weekend's action in D1 Men's College Lacrosse. We are into week four now. And we had our kind of started back on January, the last week of January. We're now into March. This is March, as Ryan would like to say if he were here on this podcast. And we're got a pretty quiet week of games coming up. There's some potentially intriguing matchups in the Big Ten. Obviously, the rivalry, Johns Hopkins and Maryland, pardon me, always a game that catches headlines. The Blue Jays jumped back into our top 20 after their win over Michigan on this past Saturday. Maryland is up to number 3 and looking like one of the more complete teams in Division 1. They got some votes this week, I know, for number 1 in the country in the media poll. Hopkins, Maryland, first game of the year. They're going to hand out the Crab Trophy twice this year. Always love our trophy games here at College Cross. So that game is going to get a lot of intrigue and attention always as the best rivalry in the sport, even if on paper Maryland looks like a reasonably prohibitive favorite. Ohio State, Penn State, both teams coming off losses a week ago. Ohio State looked very imposing week one in their win over Hopkins. They then got utterly trounced by Rutgers, giving up 22 goals. Not something you expect whatsoever from a Nick Myers coach squad. And they go on and face Penn State, a team who's really figuring things out. Had some injuries, unfortunately, for them. Cole Willard, don't know quite his status, but that injury last week against Maryland did not look great. Just struggling to come up with offense. Only 9 goals against Rutgers. 7 goals against Maryland. The Nittany Lions are really just, you know, we know that the loss of Grant Ament obviously played a huge role for them. That was kind of the question of the offseason. The real question that, you know, we had was, what does this offense look like without Grant Ament? They were ranked as high as 4th in some preseason polls. But that was a question that we were kind of looking at. And among the 50 teams who have played so far this year, Penn State is 46th in adjusted offensive efficiency. We'll look at that matchup more in a little bit. Duke at Richmond, another ACC SoCon Challenge game. Blue Devils look like a team that's rounding into the form that many expected of them coming into the season. They're number 2 in our poll, still number 1 in several others. They face a Richmond team that has, as we've talked about quite a bit on this podcast, come really close to a lot of big-time upset wins. And they should have beaten Duke a year ago, almost beat Duke in the NCAA tournament in 2019. Had a loss to Maryland last year, and that's a Loyola this year games that they definitely would feel they would win. We'll see if maybe this is a week they could finally get over a hump and get that win. Intriguing matchup in the Patriot League, Loyola versus Lehigh. Lehigh, a team that's, you know, kind of quietly hovering around near the top of the top 15 or so, you know, knocking on the door potentially the top 10 with a win this week. They scored 24 in their opening win over NGIT. They've got some intriguing pieces, and this is an early kind of barometer of how the Patriot League is going to stack up this season. Loyola coming off one of their better efforts offensively in a win over Utah. And then lastly, we've got a couple other, that's kind of it for our big matchups, but a couple other matchups on our pick 'em board that we are looking at. We've got Delaware versus Fairfield and also Jacksonville at Utah. Those are games that we will be picking this week. Just a run through of the polls before we get into looking at the matchups. The IL media poll this week had Duke at number one, Carolina at number two, Maryland at three, Georgetown four, Rutgers five. Our college cross, we had Carolina at number one, Duke at two, Maryland moved up to three, Georgetown, and then Rutgers. Pardon me. A big jump into the top five after their first two opening wins. That top five is the same across the board, maybe in now a bit different order, depending on Lax Mag has Maryland at two, Carolina at three, USI like coaches poll joins us in having Carolina as the top team in the country. But that top five, Carolina, Duke, Maryland, Georgetown, Rutgers, that is universal across the four polls this past weekend. After that, for us at six, we've got Army. Seventh, Syracuse coming off that big win over Virginia on the weekend. Notre Dame at eight, they made their debut and beat down a Robert Morris. Virginia falls to nine after a tough loss to Cuse. And then pretty wild game against High Point, a game where neither team came across looking particularly great in that one, especially towards the end. One of the more sloppy games you'll ever see, but the Cavs were able to get out of there with a win 13-12 over the Panthers in a midweek tilt yesterday, as I'm saying this, it'll be on a couple days ago when you guys listened to it. And then Denver at 10th. The Pioneers had one of their best performances of the year so far, absolutely beating down on Providence. Elsewhere, that's kind of similar elsewhere across the polls as well, albeit some different orders there. The Army Syracuse Virginia Triangle of Death has prompted a lot of discussion and, some people wondering why is, Syracuse ranked ahead of this, Virginia, or why isn't Virginia ranked ahead of Army? Because Virginia beat Army. Ultimately, Army beat Cuse, Cuse beat Virginia, Virginia beat Army. And anywhere you want to rank those three teams, I don't think it's reasonably wrong necessarily. That's a difficult kind of trio to figure out there. But we went with kind of the most recent results. Army's looked good. Syracuse got the more recent win over Virginia. From then on, Loyola at 11, Ohio State drops out of the top 10 to 12. There's Lehigh at 13, so that creates probably maybe the best matchup of the weekend, frankly. Number 11, Loyola versus number 13, Lehigh in our college cross poll. UMass at 14. The Minutemen are scheduled to make their debut, not this weekend as we thought, but next, the following weekend after that on the 13th. We'll consider potentially maybe dropping them out. I had said on that this would probably be the last week I would rank UMass if they were not able to make their debut. The fact that they do have a scheduled date at least to debut makes me maybe reconsider, but I think it's fair. How long do you keep a team that has yet to play a game in the top 20? Richmond at 15, so that'll be a top 15 tilt, as we feel at least, between them and Duke this coming Saturday. Albany at 16, they jumped into the top 20. They made their debut. We're missing a lot of guys, but still put up a lot of goals. And had a pretty solid performance, 15-9 over Colgate. Jacob Patterson had four goals and four assists for the Great Danes in that one. Tohoku Nanacoke did not play. Navy at 17. The Midshipmen are 2-0 to start the year. However, they will be out of action this weekend due to a shutdown of athletics in Annapolis for at least the next 10 days. I believe Navy is also scheduled to be off the week after that as well. I think they have penciled that in as a potential game against Penn. Obviously, that's not going to happen, so it looks like Patriot League play could start for the Mids around March 20th that weekend. And then following that, we've got Penn State 18. They kind of hang around to the top 20. We'll see if they win. Certainly, they would remain and find a jump up, but, I think a loss, a third loss, would probably spell the end of the Nittany Lions. Pardon me, top 20. 19th, Hofstra. Ryan Tierney is playing probably as well as anyone in the country at the moment. He has been absolutely sensational. I believe he set the Hofstra goals or points record for a career in Lacrosse Reference Pro. If you want to sign up for their subscription site, it's awesome. Can't recommend it enough. Ryan Tierney has the highest expected goals added per game right now at 6.14. The second... That's a full goal added higher than the second best field player. Once two through six are all face-off guys, the next field player who's adding that many goals per game is Jake Caraway of Georgetown. Ryan Tierney's just been utterly sensational for the Pride and maybe getting them in the mix to make a trip to the NCAA tournament. Ryan Tierney's never played in the NCAA tournament in his career. It would be a shame if he didn't get that opportunity at least once during his career playing for his dad up on in Hempstead. We'll see. The Pride were scheduled to play UMass in what could have been a pretty darn fun game, but that got postponed, unfortunately. And at number 20, Johns Hopkins. The Blue Jays, that makes us our fourth top 20 matchup of the week that we play in number 3 Maryland in the rivalry. They got off to a bit of a slow start against Michigan on Saturday, but second quarter on, they really put in a pretty dominant performance and a strong effort defensively. Joey Epstein had 6 goals. Connor DeSimone looking like a rejuvenated player. It's going to be his move to the attack. It'll be interesting to see. And we'll get into it right now. That matchup between the Jays and the Terps this weekend. Hopkins has some interesting pieces on offense. The way they're kind of, and they're very much, you can tell, a work in progress in terms of trying to fit all those pieces together, figure out how they work and what's the best kind of optimization of them. It feels like they've settled into having DeSimone as their guy from X. He's got 5 goals and 5 assists, 10 points in 2 games. So he's been terrific. He looks really good as a Dodger against the Buckeyes, winning several individual matchups. And then he looks good as a passer against Michigan. He had 4 assists. If DeSimone can be a legitimate ball-carrying ex-attackman for the Blue Jays and open up Joey Epstein to do what he does so well, which is be such a great wing shooter and just a guy who can kind of focus on shooting from the wing, and then if someone presses out on him, dodging and going to the cage, that could give them a pretty interesting 1-2 punch at the attack spots in the Big Ten, and that I think could open up a lot of doors that we didn't see potentially coming for the Blue Jays on the offensive side of the ball when it looked like it was going to be incumbent on Joey Epstein to do everything, essentially. But DeSimone has looked intriguing as both a dodging option and a passing option, as a guy who can be a true ex-attackman, what you'd expect, which is what Joey Epstein did his freshman year, mind you, when he had 73 points and towards the end of the season looked like an All-American, one of the best players in the country. But coming off a knee injury, as he's kind of working his way into it, you know, his big skill, he's such a great shooter from that kind of left-wing spot. If he can have someone else kind of carry the load for him, and he, you know, think of it as similar in a way to how Maryland uses Jared Bernhardt and Logan Wisnauskas as, you know, one guy, both guys who can pass and both guys who can score, but maybe, you know, one guy at one time kind of takes the load as that kind of ex-attackman and then passes it off to the other, and they, you know, can kind of switch matchups, find the matchups that are, you know, best utilized for them. That I think could help the Blue Jays quite a bit. Cole Williams, since moving to the midfield, 2 goals and an assist. He really dominated Maryland in the 2019 season. The Blue Jays played 2 games. The last 2 games these two teams played, a Johns Hopkins team that coming into those 2 games was 6-6, beat Maryland 16-11 and then 12-7. 2 pretty dominant efforts. Cole Williams had 3 goals and an assist in that first matchup. And then coming back a week later when they play in the Big Ten tournament, he had 3 goals and 2 assists. So 9 points in 2 games and 6 goals from Cole Williams. And he did it playing the way that he's played for Hopkins so far this season. He played attack in those games, but it was really coming from up top, a split dodge, getting downhill with his size and his frame, and shooting on the run. That's what I think Hopkins wants to use him as, especially now kind of permanently. Under Peter Milliman as a Dodger from up top. He's shown some flashes. That's kind of to some degree been the story of Cole Williams' career, has been, you know, flashes of strong play and looking like a, you know, a potentially great player. Hasn't quite put it all together, though. I think they're going to need something from him to get it going, because Maryland's feels, the way they've played defense has been phenomenal so far this year. They've been the, I believe, second best defense in the country by defensive efficiency, yes, at 11.2% defensive efficiency for Maryland, which is utterly phenomenal. And it's been mainly that they have felt confident putting their shorties on islands against midfield Dodgers, even kind of attack Dodgers from up top against both Michigan and Penn State, and feeling like our shorties are going to win those matchups. Roman Puglisi, Jake Higgins, who's really underrated in my opinion, Alex Smith, they've got a deep, stable short sticks, the Terps do, and they throw them out there in matchups that they feel confident in. And those shorties, they play so disciplined. They do not overextend. They don't, you know, kind of reach or make a mistake. They just play physical right on you, you know, stick to stick defense. And that's meant that the long poles for Maryland don't have to slide. They don't have to they don't have to be quick to double, because Maryland has extreme confidence in those short sticks to win their matchups, and they have won pretty much every matchup so far. And they can just focus on the attack. It was Josh Sawada against Michigan, and then Mac O'Keefe and TJ Malone against Penn State. Nick Grill dominated his matchup against Mac O'Keefe because he didn't have to worry about someone getting the ball to O'Keefe. He could just play him pretty much as a dodger, which is not O'Keefe's game. And Grill really dominated the matchup. Nick Grill has been utterly phenomenal. Maybe, to me, the best defender in the country so far this year, at least from a kind of ground ball and cause turnover type, you know, perspective. He has been just tremendous. He had four ground balls and three cause turnovers against Michigan, six ground balls and two cause turnovers against Penn State. Those are elite numbers. Brett Maycars looked strong as well. Terps defense, they are just in tune and working well together. And I think if Hopkins is unable to get someone like Cole Williams, someone else from that midfield, Evan Zinn's a guy that I know Adam has long kind of held confidence in, but he just hasn't been able to quite put it together yet. Garrett Degnan had two goals. He's more of a kind of a standalone shooter. Jack Keogh, maybe. I think they got to get someone from the midfield who's able to dodge from up top, get by those shorties, and then pull Maycar or Grill off of Epstein and DeSimone. I think you'll probably see Nick Grill on Epstein, probably Brett Maycar on Connor DeSimone. Pull one of them off, get Maryland, you know, overextending or unbalanced, and that's kind of how it will happen. I just don't know if I see that ultimately happening. I like kind of Hopkins' pieces. I think they will come together, but I don't know quite yet if that dodging for the midfield is there for me to feel like they can get the Maryland defense unbalanced. Maryland's defense hasn't been unbalanced all year at this point. And I don't quite know if I see that coming today, and then, or on Saturday rather. And then on the flip side of the ball, I think Hopkins has some good polls. I think they'll do well reasonably against Jared Bernhardt and Logan Wisnowskis. The problem is the short stick defensive midfield for Hopkins was incredibly porous against Ohio State. And so when you've got an Anthony DeMayo or a Kyle Long drawing a short stick rather, and then you bring in a guy like a Griffin Brown, potentially Eric Holden if he gets more healthy, you know, Bubba Fairman will probably draw a pull as well. But if they can, you know, get him maybe matched up on a short stick, I just don't think the short sticks of Hopkins can compete or keep up with all of these options and all of this depth that Maryland has. Maryland's done a great job as well, kind of creating big littles and getting Bernhardt or Wisnowskis on a short stick in their first two games. If they do that against Hopkins, it'll be a nightmare, I think, for the Hopkins defense. So I think there are areas where Hopkins is, you know, maybe kind of top player for top player. They're not quite as good, but I think they're reasonably, you know, kind of there to make it a close game. But I think down the lineup of the depth Maryland has, the short stick DMA position, the confidence they'll have in their matchups, and then the flip side, the lack of depth that Hopkins has at those spots means that I think Maryland pulls away in this matchup and winds up winning pretty comfortably. But it'll be interesting to see. You know, the Terps didn't play their best game. You'd figure they'd be up for Hopkins and put in, you know, their best performance. And if Hopkins has some, you know, energy and, you know, especially, you know, motivation for kind of coming off their first win at Pete Milliman, it's Maryland Hopkins. Anything can happen. The matchups, we've seen the matchup be blowouts. We've seen absolute classics. It's a rivalry that with Dave Petromello and John Tillman tended to go in swings. Hopkins would win two or three in a row, then Maryland would win two or three in a row. They kind of trade back and forth. It'll be interesting to see how it develops with Pete Milliman and John Tillman, who have some prior experience coaching against one another in the future as we go into the next stage of such a great rivalry. But I'm going with the Terps. Second matchup in the Big Ten, Ohio State, Penn State. This one, who knows really what's going to happen here. Ohio State's offense has looked good. They're at operating at 30.6% offensive efficiency. They did score 12 goals against Rutgers. So it wasn't, you know, Griffin Hughes had 5 goals in that game. He's got 8 goals in 2 games to start the year. He's still got Trey LeClaire, who looks good. But Rutgers, they really just shut down the depth of Ohio State. Jackson Reed didn't get anything going. Grant Mitchell didn't really get anything going. I think we're starting to see some of the Ohio State injuries that they've had at the midfield spots kind of start to catch up with them a bit in that one. We've seen Ryan Tarafenko have to play a lot more pardon me, play some offense. You know, we didn't see, haven't seen Johnny Weissman yet. Haven't seen Connor Mitchell. These are some guys that, you know, or Johnny Weissman had a goal, rather. He had a goal against Rutgers, but that's kind of it. He had four shots on goal against Hopkins. Hasn't quite looked like himself. You know, he's a guy who usually has been a good shooter on the outside for the Buckeyes. Connor Mitchell is a guy who we have not seen at all so far. He looked like a potentially had a couple goals last year for the Buckeyes. We just haven't seen kind of any of him so far. And the Buckeyes have thus kind of been forced to play some Tarafenko more on the offensive side of the ball. And they've looked a bit top heavy. And that's not what Ohio State is when they're at their best. When they have athletes, just loads of athletes they can throw at you, that's where they look, you know, really successful. That's when they're at their absolute best. And that really kind of hurt them against the Rutgers team that was just playing at such an incredible pace. And it just did not feel like Ohio State could handle that kind of pace. The good news for them is I do not think that we are going to see Penn State play that way. Penn State has not played at the kind of speed or pace that we saw them play with Grand Am. It's been slower. I think they're trying to manage the game some, not having that same sort of explosive offense. They're trying to find themselves in some ways, and I think that probably plays into Ohio State's hands here. I think this is a game that is probably contested, you know, primarily in the half court, on offense in the 6-on-6, a game that will have longer possessions where Ohio State's defense will feel like they can get physical and they can really wear down Penn State and then hopefully kind of flex some of their muscles more on the offensive side of the ball. Penn State's defense has played well so far. It should be noted. This has been a defense that's right now they're operating, and according to Locke's reference, they're a top 10 defense in the country. So, you know, you look at how Ohio State played against, you know, Rutgers a week ago when it was not a bad performance, but one that was kind of lacking depth a bit. Penn State could feel pretty confident maybe in their ability to match up on Ohio State, especially if Ohio State's lacking some depth at the midfield and some other scoring options behind Hughes and Trey LeClair, to maybe stick with this team. And so I think it could, faceoffs could be a key. We have not seen yet. We did not see Justin Inácio in week one for Ohio State. We saw him against Rutgers, and he won about 50%. Right at 50%, he won 18 faceoffs on 36 attempts. Probably still working his way back. Jerry Arcari was dominant against Maryland. I think this is a game where faceoffs could play a role, as well as goaltending. Skylar Wallen for Ohio State looked really strong against Johns Hopkins and then got pierced a lot against Rutgers. Colby Knies kind of kept Penn State in that game against Maryland. He made some big-time saves, four or five, that kind of kept that game from getting out of hand. I'm intrigued by this game. I think it's at a pace Ohio State will like. I think Ohio State has the better athletes, the better physicality and speed, but Penn State's got a defense that is keeping them in games, even with their kind of lack of offensive trouble. And if Penn State could get some faceoffs, maybe get some, have the better, win the specialty teams in terms of saves and faceoff play, I think they'll feel like they could maybe be in this one and maybe kind of pull off a loss late. And they're a team that I think they, a win is really what they need. They need a win to get some confidence, to just, you know, feel good about themselves coming off a tough, you know, the Big Ten is just, it's going to be a landmine this year. And Penn State, they get this one at Panzer. If they're 0-3 going into two road games against Hopkins, Michigan, that's going to be tough. You do not want to put yourself in a hole in the first half of this Big Ten kind of slate. So I came into this one thinking Ohio State, and now I might be changing my pick. We'll have to see when we drop our pick 'em on Friday. I'm intrigued by this game and the way it could potentially turn out. Loyola Lehigh, I'm really intrigued for this one. I think at the start of the year, my big question with the Hounds was just where is the offense? Where is it coming from? They had not found anyone who could fill the role of Pat Spencer. And first week against Richmond, it looked a lot like that. They were, it just, I didn't see an identity. I didn't see what they wanted to really do on the offensive side of the ball. The possessions are very slow. They're still playing at a relatively slower pace. which is not quite often what you expect from Loyola. You expect Loyola to be a fast team. That's well, they've always been incredible on the rope units. They haven't had Ryan McNulty so far. They didn't at his kind of peak kind of abilities. You know, he came in with some injuries. He has looked good. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. He had 5 ground balls, 2 cost turnovers against Richmond, 3 ground balls against Virginia. But McNulty, when he's at his best, is a guy who can push offense. I mean, he can really kind of, you know, change the tenor of a game offensively. He had 4 points in 6 games for the Hounds last year. You know, crazy numbers of cost turnovers. He's a guy who can, you know, energize them in the transition in the half court and try and give them in transition, you know, in the kind of early offense game, rather, not as opposed to half court, and get things going, you know, give them a different element. And he's looked good so far, but I think you can tell he's not quite at his, you know, up to his kind of peak abilities. If they can get him, you know, kind of going as well, I think that could be interesting. But it's the last 2 games, it's looked better. These have been the best 2 games that I've seen Loyola play on offense since Pat graduated, better than any games they played a year ago. They played great against Virginia. Evan James had 3 goals and assists. He's been kind of a revelation as a guy going along with Aiden Olmstead and Kevin Lindley, a guy with some dodging ability, you know, some ability to get by his man. And he had a monster game against Utah, just as a tough matchup that makes teams focus on someone else. They're going to focus on Olmstead because he's the primary ball handler. He's the guy who now operates that offense. But, you know, Lindley's kind of a phenomenal shooter and a great goal scorer that Kevin Lindley is, but not a guy that you have to focus on in terms of, you know, dodging. But Evan James, you know, has come on and made them, you know, focus on someone else along with Olmstead and create some better matchups for Ola to unbalance the defense. He's at 11 points in 3 games. And against Utah, I was kind of intrigued by that matchup without Bailey Savio to give Lola that advantage. But Aiden Olmstead had one of the best games of his career, 5 goals, 3 assists. If they've got kind of a potent kind of 1-2 punch there with Olmstead and James as guys who can dodge and win matchups, and you've got Lindley as a, you know, kind of a scorer, I think that creates some abilities for some other guys down the lineup, like a Riley Say, who's shown some talent, Seth Higgins, Peter Swindell is an experienced guy. Maybe get them on a shorty, maybe get them in a matchup that they feel more comfortable with, and create some other opportunities for guys down the Loyola lineup to feel more comfortable and not push it as much. But with that being said, Virginia has not looked good defensively this year, so that was a, you know, kind of beneficial matchup in that regard. It was, you know, we haven't seen them against, you know, probably a truly great defense so far this year. And Utah as well is not a great defensive team. Utah, in fact, is a around kind of bottom. They're at 31% in terms of defensive efficiency. You know, not the best numbers in the world, but I was encouraged by what I saw with the Hounds. But this will be a different test. And especially intrigued seeing on the other side of the ball, you know, that Lehigh offense, they've got some real options there. Tommy Schelling had 2 goals and 5 assists. Christian Mule on the attack had 4 goals. Cruz Cintron, a senior, had some as well, Justin Tiernan. They had, you know, a year ago, this a Lehigh team that was put up some real, you know, numbers. Tommy Schelling had 22 goals in 6 games. Christian Mule had 16 goals. You saw, you know, a team that really, you know, showed some punch in a way that Lehigh teams have kind of lacked, you know, in recent years. We know how Kevin Cassis' teams generally play. They're going to be good on the defensive side of the ball. They're going to be physical. You know, Craig Chick, who was there for a long time, was a beast of a defender, one of the best in the country, a cost turnover machine. They've had some good goalie play in the past as well. They don't beat themselves. You know, so you had an idea of what you expected Lehigh to be, but they, in those kind of big games, you saw that the offense tend to go lacking a bit. You wondered if there was that extra punch. It looked like they found it this year, and they haven't gotten Andrew Eichelberger really going yet. He had only a goal against NJIT, only, you know, 2 shots on goal. He was a guy a year ago for them who had a 4-point 4-goal game against Navy, 4-point afternoon against Holy Cross, 13 points in six games. He's another guy you got to watch out for. So you take Schelling as a, you know, a guy who can run offense, Mule as a goal scorer, throwing Eichelberger from the midfield. You've got some pieces there. And then an experienced goalie in James Spence. Both teams in this one are going to have good goalies. If Bailey Savio is back, you get Bailey Savio and Mike Sisselberger at the faceoff dot. That's a really big time, you know, faceoff matchup. Mike Sisselberger won 60% a year ago in week one against NJIT. He was completely dominant, winning 71%. Two teams with great goalies, two teams with great faceoff guys, two teams who have identities of being good, strong, physical defensive teams, but some potential and, you know, optimism on maybe what they can start putting together on the offensive side of the ball. I think you get a really evenly poised matchup here, and two teams who kind of match up well against each other, as, you know, just evenly matched, who both feel that they can match up well on the defensive side and in all areas. And I think that makes for a really intriguing matchup to determine kind of what's kind of the pecking order in the Patriot League going to look like. You know, how we've seen Army look great. We saw Loyola look, you know, encouraging even in a loss to Virginia. They did sneak out a, you know, close win against Richmond in week one. Loyola's been the class of this conference. Lehigh, been a while since, you know, the Mountain Hawks were able to win the Patriot League. And obviously they had a couple years early in the decade where they made the NCAA tournament. Lehigh gets Loyola and Army at home this year. Obviously home games look different with COVID, but still, that's something intriguing to look at. I think I'm going to ride with Lehigh in this game. I just feel like they're a team on the rise. They are at home. Even, you know, it's bus trips are hard in COVID, as we've kind of learned. It's difficult for teams. Even this isn't a long one for Loyola. It's still difficult with protocols and everything in terms of travel. And I like Lehigh's ability to maybe kind of neutralize Loyola's big advantages. Normally, Loyola's always going to be the better goalie team in terms of saves, and they're always going to be the better faceoff team. I think Lehigh can kind of neutralize that a bit. So I'm going with the Mountain Hawks, but I expect this to be a pretty darn good game. We got Jacksonville at Utah. That's another kind of evenly poised matchup between two kind of up-and-coming teams who have had some encouraging performances to start the year. We saw Jacksonville look, you know, against a tough loss to North Carolina, and then against Navy, they were in that game for time before they kind of fell off by the wayside a bit. But they beat Mercer 12-11. They dominated Bellarmine, so they're at 2-2. Matt Stagnan, the Hopkins transfers, look promising for them on the attack. I think they've got some good pieces on the offensive side in matchups where they're not facing teams. I mean, Navy's got some really strong defenders on that side of the ball. Jackson Bonnet's a, you know, a five-star guy, big-time recruit. But Navy's always going to be a good defensive team. Spencer Reese and goal has played great. And Carolina, obviously, is a team that, you know, is going to out-talent Jacksonville. But in matchups for Jacksonville, kind of matchups well, I like the pieces they have on offense. And then you look at Utah, who also got a 5-goal win over Bellarmine, played Denver really close in week one, could have won that game. A young team that is trying to find itself, trying to find, you know, guys who can be a difference maker for them. Tyler Bradbury has looked good. Utah's defense, you know, it's, as we mentioned, has not been great, but it's had games where it's kind of been, you know, hit or miss. They were not good against Loyola, but they were good against Denver, and they, you know, matched up well against Denver. So I think you get a pretty interesting matchup here. Zach Johns has been great in goal for the Utes, two programs who would really like a win and who, you know, kind of want to see kind of where they stack up against a kind of evenly matched opponent. Utah's playing some, they're going to play Virginia this year. They're going to play Cuse. They're going to go on the road to BU. Utah only has, I believe, one more home game, you know, this year. And this is one home game they get where they are, you know, not having to travel cross country in the way that they, you know, normally have to, and kind of as all the, as we mentioned, ways that they, you know, have to stretch themselves, you know, in terms of travel and how difficult that is, with flights for them, and then, you know, bus rides. They played Denver and Air Force weren't, you know, super long trips, but they traveled to Bellarmine and got a win. They traveled to Loyola, got a loss. They're going to be home now against Jacksonville before going to Mercer, going to BU, going to Charlottesville, going to Cleveland State. So this is one of their two home games against a D1 team this year. So the Utes will definitely be poised and looking for hopefully to nab a win in one of their few opportunities playing at home. I think they'll get the dub this weekend. Delaware at Fairfield. Fairfield played a absolutely wild game against Providence on a Wednesday. You never know what can happen in college across in a midweek game. And Providence and Fairfield played 18-17. The Friars just coming away with the victory in that one. Just a crazy game. Fairfield, you know, making their season debut and coming out dropping 17 goals with whopping 10 goal scorers. Andrew Baxter now in year. This will be his first full season. Got it over from Yale. Fairfield was a big-time goal-scoring team a year ago. Scored 18 against Stony Brook, 14 against Merrimack. They were one of the – they scored 12 against Georgetown. 12 against Georgetown, the Hoyas. That's a heck of an achievement. 19 against Quinnipiac, 19 against LIU, 21 against Siena, 12 in a loss to Harvard. So there is some goal-scoring prowess on this Fairfield team that is definitely going to be, you know, something to watch out for as the season goes along. Dylan Beckwith, what a player that guy is. He had 42 points in those games for them. Last year, he had 2 goals and 3 assists in their week opener. This year, Patrick Drake at 3-3. So an explosive Fairfield offense matching up against a pretty darn explosive Delaware offense, too. Mike Robinson, Charlie Kitchen, Ty Kurtz. I don't know about you guys. I think that might be a top 10, top 5, potentially attack unit in the country. Like, they have some absolute dudes. Delaware does on the offensive side of the ball. So if you're looking for a big time offensive game, I don't think you can go much further than this one right here. This could be a first to 18, first to 19 type game wins. And I'm really excited to see this one. It's the start of CAA play. You know, the CAA looks just so evenly matched this year. I've seen Delaware have some good performances and then also, you know, struggle to pull away from Bellarmine on this past weekend. They lost to the Mount, albeit that was when they did not have Mike Robinson, Charlie Kitchen, or Ty Kurtz. Hofstra lost to St. John's, but also beat Stony Brook. Towson probably should have beat Richmond last week, unfortunately, but also had, you know, some tough blowout losses to Virginia and Duke. You got UMass, who still looks like the kind of class of the conference, but you got Fairfield, who's got the ability to score goals. That everyone looks so close in that conference, and so I'm looking forward to seeing how that kind of plays out when you're looking at, you know, the number of conference teams that these teams are going to play. I think it's going to be 8-game conference schedule. The Thunderdome could definitely – that could never be more apt than this year. And then Duke-Richmond, a last matchup to kind of look at. Blue Devils' defense has been strong. The quality of competition has not really been there. Air Force, Towson, Mercer, you're not, you know, facing powerhouse offensive teams. But that defense is looking strong. We know they've got a lot of options there. Kenny Brower, JT Giles-Harris, obviously Will Frazzoli, some short-stick guys like Terry Lindsay. A deep team on the defensive side of the ball, and that's looking like an important element to have in an ACC where Carolina's defense has not looked bad, but hasn't had kind of a big-time performance yet. Virginia's had some rough outings, Syracuse as well. That could be a way for Duke to stand out in the ACC. And then I think Joe Robertson coming back, that Sowers-Robertson-O'Neal attack pairing, I think that's really worked out well. As opposed to putting Dyson Williams with Joe Robertson, I think those two guys are just a bit too similar. They don't have exact games, but both are going to kind of serve as sort of wing shooters that Sowers is going to try and find. Whereas with O'Neal, you get an inside presence, you know, another guy who can dodge as well and kind of use his big frame. He's started to come around and look and have some big games. 4 goals against Towson, 2 goals and an assist against Air Force. Joe Robertson had a monster outing with 10 points against Air Force. That's nuts. Michael Sowers after a slow kind of start. 6 points against Mercer, 6 points against Towson, 8 points against Air Force. Richmond, they play these games close. They kept Carolina's offense to only, 14 goals. That was one of Carolina's, I believe, their worst offensive performance of the season. I think they slowed around kind of 35% offensive efficiency. Can they do that again against Duke? Can they, if they can put that kind of performance in place against the Blue Devils, this could be a game that maybe Richmond does not have to bring the offensive firepower that they have lacked. That maybe they can get it to be a game in the 11s or 12s. But 7 against Loyola, 9 against North Carolina, 11 against Towson in overtime. I liked the pieces on this Richmond team, and it is a super experienced team, but the offense, it just hasn't. It hasn't quite come through. Lansbury's got 9 points in 3 games. And then from there, Dalton Young, Luke Graham, Mitch Savoca's been pretty quiet. Tyler Schultz, a good player. He's been pretty quiet. A lot of Richmond guys that have been really good players for them have just not come to the fold offensively. I'm not seeing enough, in my view, from the Spiders offensively. 35th out of 15th teams in offensive efficiency at 26%. That's not going to cut it. They're going to, I think they can make this game a slower pace, a more defensive game. And I think if you can hold Carolina to 14, I think you can probably hold Duke maybe even to a bit fewer than that and maybe get them in it. But it's, do they have the offensive punch enough themselves? That I'm not sure of. And the way Duke's defense is playing, this could wind up being one of those, it looks close on the scoreboard, but it's not actually close in reality kind of games. And so with that, I'm going with the Blue Devils in that matchup. You'll get our full pick'em tomorrow, and or today rather, when you're listening to this, and you can yell at us and tell us why we're wrong for picking against your team, or why you think we're all handsome and lovely for picking your favorite team. But some intriguing matchups on the docket, even if it is more of a quiet kind of week. Looking ahead, next week though, there's some big time games. You got UNC, Virginia, Georgetown, Denver, Rutgers, Maryland. So, they can't all be bangers, but sometimes a quiet week can produce some really fun games. And I do think there are some pretty intriguing games on this schedule as well. So as always, hope you enjoyed the game. Thank you guys for listening to me just kind of talking to your ear hole for a bit, and starting to get a bit warmer out there. Make sure you stay hydrated, and Becky Lynch for president.